At these signals and voice, Don Quixote turned his head and saw by the light of the moon, which was then in its full splendour, that someone was calling to him from the hole in the wall, which seemed to him to be a window, and, what is more, with a gilt grating, as rich castles such as he believed the inn to be ought to have. And it immediately suggested itself to his imagination that, as on the former occasion the fair damsel, the daughter of the lady of the castle, overcome by love for him, was once more endeavouring to win his affections, and with this idea, not to show himself discourteous or ungrateful, he turned Rocinante's head and approached the hole, and as he perceived the two wenches, he said, "I pity you, beauteous lady, that you should have directed your thoughts of love to a quarter from whence it is impossible that such a return can be made to you as is due to your great merit and gentle birth, for which you must not blame this unhappy knight-errant, whom love renders incapable of submission to any other than her whom, the first moment his eyes beheld her, he made absolute mistress of his soul. Forgive me, noble lady, and retire to your apartment, and do not, by any further declaration of your passion, compel me to show myself more ungrateful. And if, of the love you bear me, you should find that there is anything else in my power wherein I can gratify you, provided it be not love itself, demand it of me. For I swear to you, by that sweet absent enemy of mine, to grant it this instant, though it be that you require of me a lock of Medusa's hair, which was all snakes, or even the very beams of the sun shut up in a vial."
"My mistress wants nothing of that sort, Sir Knight," said Maritornes at this.
"What, then, discreet dame, is it that your mistress wants?" replied Don Quixote.
"Only one of your fair hands," said Maritornes, "to enable her to vend over it the great passion which has brought her to this loophole, so much to the risk of her honour. For if the lord her father had heard her, the least slice he would cut off her would be her ear."
"I should like to see that tried," said Don Quixote, "but he had better beware of that, if he does not want to meet the most disastrous end that ever father in the world met, for having laid hands on the tender limbs of a love-stricken daughter."
Maritornes felt sure that Don Quixote would present the hand she had asked, and making up her mind what to do, she got down from the hole and went into the stable, where she took the halter of Sancho Panza's ass, and in all haste returned to the hole, just as Don Quixote had planted himself standing on Rocinante's saddle in order to reach the grated window where he supposed the lovelorn damsel to be. And giving her his hand, he said,
"Lady, take this hand, or rather this scourge of the evildoers of the earth. Take, I say, this hand which no other hand of woman has ever touched, not even hers who has complete possession of my entire body. I present it to you not that you may kiss it, but that you may observe the contexture of the sinews, the close network of the muscles, the breadth and capacity of the veins, whence you may infer what must be the strength of the arm that has such a hand."
"That we shall see presently," said Maritornes,
and making a running knot on the halter, she passed it over his wrist, and coming down from the hole, tied the other end very firmly to the bolt of the door of the straw loft. Don Quixote, feeling the roughness of the rope on his wrist, exclaimed,
"Your grace seems to be grating rather than caressing my hand. Treat it not so harshly, for it is not to blame for the offence my resolution has given you, nor is it just to wreak all your vengeance on so small a part. Remember that one who loves so well should not revenge herself so cruelly."
But there was nobody now to listen to these words of Don Quixote's, for as soon as Maritornes had tied him, she and the other made off, ready to die with laughing, leaving him fastened in such a way that it was impossible for him to release himself. He was, as has been said, standing on Rocinante with his arm passed through the hole and his wrist tied to the bolt of the door, and in mighty fear and dread of being left hanging by the arm if Rocinante were to stir one side or the other. So he did not dare to make the least movement, although from the patience and imperturbable disposition of Rocinante he had good reason to expect that he would stand without budging for a whole century. Finding himself fast, then, and that the ladies had retired, he began to fancy that all this was done by enchantment, as on the former occasion when, in that same castle, that enchanted Moor of a carrier had belaboured him, and he cursed in his heart his own want of sense and judgment in venturing to enter the castle again, after having come off so badly the first time. It being a settled point with knights-errant, that when they have tried an adventure, and have not succeeded in it, It is a sign that it is not reserved for them but for others, and that therefore they need not try it again. Nevertheless, he pulled his arm to see if he could release himself, but it had been made so fast that all his efforts were in vain. It is true he pulled it gently, lest Rocinante should move, but try as he might to seat himself in the saddle, he had nothing for it but to stand upright or pull his hand off. Then it was he wished for the sword of Amadis, against which no enchantment whatever had any power. Then he cursed his ill fortune. Then he magnified the loss the world would sustain by his absence while he remained there enchanted, for that he believed he was beyond all doubt. Then he once more took to thinking of his beloved Dulcinea del Toboso. Then he called to his worthy squire Sancho Panza, who, buried in sleep and stretched upon the pack-saddle of his ass, was oblivious at that moment of the mother that bore him. Then he called upon the sages Lirgandeo and Alquife to come to his aid. Then he invoked his good friend Urganda to succour him. And then, at last, morning found him in such a state of desperation and perplexity that he was bellowing like a bull, for he had no hope that day would bring any relief to his suffering, which he believed would last for ever, inasmuch as he was enchanted. And of this he was convinced by seeing that Rocinante never stirred, much or little, and he felt persuaded that he and his horse were to remain in this state without eating or drinking or sleeping until the malign influence of the stars was overpassed, or until some other more sage enchanter should disenchant him. But he was very much deceived in this conclusion, for daylight had hardly begun to appear when there came up to the inn four men on horseback, well equipped and accoutred, with muskets across their saddle-bows. They called out and knocked loudly at the gate of the inn, which was still shut, on seeing which Don Quixote, even there where he was, did not forget to act as sentinel, and said in a loud and imperious tone, "Knights, or squires, or whatever ye be, ye have no right to knock at the gates of this castle, for it is plain enough that they who are within are either asleep or else are not in the habit of throwing open the fortress until the sun's rays are spread over the whole surface of the earth. Withdraw to a distance and wait till it is broad daylight, and then we shall see whether it will be proper or not to open to you."
"What the devil fortress or castle is this," said one, "to make us stand on such ceremony? If you are the innkeeper, bid them open to us. We are travellers who only want to feed our horses and go on, for we are in haste."
"Do you think, gentlemen, that I look like an innkeeper?" said Don Quixote.
"I don't know what you look like," replied the other, "but I know that you're talking nonsense when you call this inn a castle."
"A castle it is," returned Don Quixote. "Nay, more, one of the best in this whole province, and it has within it people who have had the sceptre in the hand and the crown on the head."
"It would be better if it were the other way," said the traveller, "the sceptre on the head and the crown in the hand. But if so, maybe there is within some company of players with whom it is a common thing to have those crowns and sceptres you speak of. For in such a small inn as this, and where such silence is kept, I do not believe any people entitled to crowns and sceptres could have taken out their quarters."
"You know but little of the world," returned Don Quixote, "since you are ignorant of what commonly occurs in knight-errantry."
But the comrades of the spokesman, growing weary of the dialogue with Don Quixote, renewed their knocks with great vehemence, so much so that the host, and not only he but everybody at the inn, awoke, and he got up to ask who knocked. It happened at this moment that one of the horses of the four who were seeking admittance went to smell Rocinante, who, melancholy, dejected, and with drooping ears, stood motionless, supporting his sorely stretched master. And as he was, after all, flesh, though he looked as if he were made of wood, he could not help giving way, and in return smelling the one who had come to offer him attentions. But he had hardly moved at all when Don Quixote lost his footing, and slipping off the saddle, he would have come to the ground but for being suspended by the arm, which caused him such agony that he believed either his wrist would be cut through or his arm torn off. And he hung so near the ground that he could just touch it with his feet, which was all the worse for him. For finding how little was wanted to enable him to plant his feet firmly, he struggled and stretched himself as much as he could to gain a footing, just like those undergoing the torture of the strapado, when they are hung at touch and no touch, that is, almost but not quite upon the ground, who aggravate their own sufferings by their violent efforts to stretch themselves, deceived by the hope which makes them fancy that with a very little more they will reach the ground.
Chapter 44
in which are continued the unheard-of adventures of the inn. So loud, in fact, were the shouts of Don Quixote that the landlord, opening the gate of the inn in all haste, came out in dismay and ran to see who was uttering such cries, and those who were outside joined him. Maritornes, who had been by this time roused up by the same outcry, suspecting what it was, ran to the loft and, without anyone seeing her, untied the halter by which Don Quixote was suspended, and down he came to the ground in the sight of the landlord and the travellers, who, approaching, asked him what was the matter with him that he shouted so. He, without replying a word, took the rope off his wrist, and rising to his feet, leapt upon Rocinante, braced his shield upon his arm, put his lance in rest, and making a considerable circuit of the plain, came back at a half-gallop, exclaiming, "Whoever shall say that I have been enchanted with just cause, provided my lady the Princess Micomicona grants me permission to do so, I give him the lie, challenge him, and defy him to single combat." The newly arrived travellers were amazed at the words of Don Quixote, but the landlord removed their surprise by telling them who he was, and not to mind as he was out of his senses. They then asked the landlord if by any chance a youth of about 15 years of age had come to that inn, one dressed like a muleteer, and of such and such an appearance, describing that of Doña Clara's lover. The landlord replied that there were so many people in the inn he had not noticed the person they were inquiring for, but one of them, observing the coach in which the judge had come, said,
"Here he is, no doubt, for this is the coach he's following. Let one of us stay at the gate, and the rest of us go in to look for him, or indeed it would be as well if one of us went round the inn, lest he should escape over the wall of the yard."
"So be it," said another. And while two of them went in, one remained at the gate, and the other made the circuit of the inn. Observing all which, the landlord was unable to conjecture for what reason they were taking all these precautions, though he understood they were looking for the youth whose description they had given him. It was by this time broad daylight, and for that reason, as well as in consequence of the noise Don Quixote had made, everybody was awake and up, but particularly Doña Clara and Dorothea, for they had been able to sleep but badly that night, the one from agitation at having her lover so near her, the other from curiosity to see him. Don Quixote, when he saw that not one of the four travellers took any notice of him or replied to his challenge, was furious and ready to die with indignation and wrath, and if he could have found in the ordinances of chivalry that it was lawful for a knight-errant to undertake or engage in another enterprise when he had plighted his word and faith not to involve himself in any until he had made an end of the one to which he was pledged, he would have attacked the whole of them, and would have made them return an answer in spite of themselves. But considering that it would not become him, nor be right, to begin any new enterprise until he had established Micomicona in her kingdom, he was constrained to hold his peace, and wait quietly to see what would be the upshot of the proceedings of those same travellers, one of whom found the youth they were seeking lying asleep by the side of a muleteer, without a thought of anyone coming in search of him, much less finding him. The man laid hold of him by the arm, saying,
"It becomes you well indeed, Señor Don Luis, to be in the dress you wear, and well the bed in which I find you agrees with the luxury in which your mother reared you."
The youth rubbed his sleepy eyes and stared for a while at him who held him, but presently recognized him as one of his father's servants, at which he was so taken aback that for a time he could not find or utter a word. While the servant went on to say,
"There is nothing for it now, Señor Don Luis, but to submit quietly and return home, unless it is your wish that my lord your father should take his departure for the other world, for nothing else can be the consequence of the grief he is in at your absence."
"But how did my father know that I had gone this road and in this dress?" said Don Luis.
"It was a student to whom you confided your intentions," answered the servant, "that disclosed them, touched with pity at the distress he saw your father suffer on missing you. He therefore dispatched four of his servants in quest of you, and here we all are at your service, better pleased than you can imagine that we shall return so soon and be able to restore you to those eyes that so yearn for you."
"That shall be as I please, or as heaven orders," returned Don Luis.
"What can you please, or heaven order," said the other, "except to agree to go back? Anything else is impossible."
All this conversation between the two was overheard by the muleteer at whose side Don Luis lay, and rising he went to report what had taken place to Don Fernando, Cardenio, and the others, who had by this time dressed themselves, and told them how the man had addressed the youth as Don, and what words had passed, and how he wanted him to return to his father, which the youth was unwilling to do. With this, and what they already knew of the rare voice that heaven had bestowed upon him, they all felt very anxious to know more particularly who he was, and even to help him if it was attempted to employ force against him. So they hastened to where he was still talking and arguing with his servant. Dorothea at this instant came out of her room, followed by Doña Clara, all in a tremor, and calling Cardenio aside, she told him in a few words the story of the musician and Doña Clara, and he at the same time told her what had happened, how his father's servants had come in search of him. But in telling her so, he did not speak low enough but that Doña Clara heard what he said, at which she was so much agitated that had not Dorothea hastened to support her, she would have fallen to the ground. Cardenio then bade Dorothea return to her room, as he would endeavour to make the whole matter right, and they did as he desired. All the four who had come in quest of Don Luis had now come into the inn and surrounded him, urging him to return and console his father at once and without a moment's delay. He replied that he could not do so on any account until he had concluded some business in which his life, honour, and heart were at stake. The servants pressed him, saying that most certainly they would not return without him, and that they would take him away whether he liked it or not. "You shall not do that," replied Don Luis, "unless you take me dead, though however you take me it will be without life." By this time most of those in the inn had been attracted by the dispute, but particularly Cardenio, Don Fernando, his companions, the judge, the curate, the barber, and Don Quixote, for he now considered there was no necessity for mounting guard over the castle any longer. Cardenio, being already acquainted with the young man's story, asked the men who wanted to take him away what object they had in seeking to carry off this youth against his will.
"Our object," said one of the four, "is to save the life of his father, who is in danger of losing it through this gentleman's disappearance."
Upon this, Don Luis exclaimed, "There is no need to make my affairs public here. I am free, and I will return if I please, and if not, none of you shall compel me."
"Reason will compel your worship," said the man, "and if it has no power over you, it has power over us, to make us do what we came for and what it is our duty to do." "Let us hear what the whole affair is about," said the judge at this.
But the man, who knew him as a neighbour of theirs, replied,
"Do you not know this gentleman, Señor Judge? He is the son of your neighbour, who has run away from his father's house in a dress so unbecoming his rank, as your worship may perceive."
The judge on this looked at him more carefully and recognised him, and embracing him said,
"What folly is this, Señor Don Luis, or what can have been the cause that could have induced you to come here in this way, and in this dress, which so ill becomes your condition?"
Tears came into the eyes of the young man, and he was unable to utter a word in reply to the judge, who told the four servants not to be uneasy, for all would be satisfactorily settled. And then taking Don Luis by the hand, he drew him aside, and asked the reason of his having come there. But while he was questioning him, they heard a loud outcry at the gate of the inn, the cause of which was that two of the guests who had passed the night there, seeing everybody busy about finding out what it was the four men wanted, had conceived the idea of going off without paying what they owed. But the landlord, who minded his own affairs more than other people's, caught them going out of the gate and demanded his reckoning, abusing them for their dishonesty with such language that he drove them to reply with their fists, and so they began to lay on him in such a style that the poor man was forced to cry out and call for help. The landlady and her daughter could see no one more free to give aid than Don Quixote, and to him the daughter said, "Sir Knight, by the virtue God has given you, help my poor father, for two wicked men are beating him to a mummy." To which Don Quixote very deliberately and phlegmatically replied,
"Fair damsel, at the present moment your request is inopportune, for I am debarred from involving myself in any adventure until I have brought to a happy conclusion one to which my word has pledged me. But that which I can do for you is what I will now mention. Run and tell your father to stand his ground as well as he can in this battle, and on no account to allow himself to be vanquished, while I go and request permission of the Princess Micomicona to enable me to succour him in his distress, and if she grants it, rest assured, I will relieve him from it."
"Sinner that I am," exclaimed Maritornes, who stood by, "before you have got your permission, my master will be in the other world."
"Give me leave, Señora, to obtain the permission I speak of," returned Don Quixote, "and if I get it, it will matter very little if he is in the other world. For I will rescue him thence in spite of all the same world can do, or at any rate I will give you such a revenge over those who shall have sent him there
that you will be more than moderately satisfied." And without saying anything more, he went and knelt before Dorothea, requesting Her Highness in knightly and errant phrase to be pleased to grant him permission to aid and succour the castellan of that castle, who now stood in grievous jeopardy. The princess granted it graciously, and he at once, bracing his shield on his arm and drawing his sword, hastened to the inn-gate, where the two guests were still handling the landlord roughly. But as soon as he reached the spot, he stopped short and stood still, though Maritornes and the landlady asked him why he hesitated to help their master and husband.
"I hesitate," said Don Quixote, "because it is not lawful for me to draw sword against persons of squirely condition. But call my squire Sancho to me, for this defence and vengeance are his affair and business."
Thus matters stood at the inn gate, where there was a very lively exchange of fisticuffs and punches, to the sore damage of the landlord and to the wrath of Maritornes, the landlady, and her daughter, who were furious when they saw the pusillanimity of Don Quixote and the hard treatment their master, husband, and father was undergoing. But let us leave him there, for he will surely find someone to help him, and if not, let him suffer and hold his tongue who attempts more than his strength allows him to do. And let us go back 50 paces to see what Don Luis said in reply to the judge, whom we left questioning him privately as to his reasons for coming on foot and so meanly dressed. To which the youth, pressing his hand in a way that showed his heart was troubled by some great sorrow, and shedding a flood of tears, made answer, "Señor, I have no more to tell you than that from the moment when, through heaven's will and our being near neighbours, I first saw Doña Clara, your daughter and my lady, from that instant I made her the mistress of my will, and if yours, my true lord and father, offers no impediment, this very day she shall become my wife. For her I left my father's house, and for her I assumed this disguise, to follow her whithersoever she may go, as the arrow seeks its mark, or the sailor the pole star. She knows nothing more of my passion than what she may have learned from having sometimes seen from a distance that my eyes were filled with tears. You know already, Señor, the wealth and noble birth of my parents, and that I am their sole heir. If this be a sufficient inducement for you to venture to make me completely happy, accept me at once as your son. For if my father, influenced by other objects of his own, should disapprove of this happiness I have sought for myself, time has more power to alter and change things than human will." With this the love-smitten youth was silent, while the judge, after hearing him, was astonished, perplexed, and surprised, as well at the manner and intelligence with which Don Luis had confessed the secret of his heart, as at the position in which he found himself, not knowing what course to take in a matter so sudden and unexpected. All the answer, therefore, he gave him was to bid him to make his mind easy for the present, and arrange with his servants not to take him back that day, so that there might be time to consider what was best for all parties. Don Luis kissed his hands by force, nay, bathed them with tears, in a way that would have touched a heart of marble, not to say that of the judge, who, as a shrewd man, had already perceived how advantageous the marriage would be to his daughter, though, were it possible, he would have preferred that it should be brought about with the consent of the father of Don Luis, who he knew looked for a title for his son. The guests had by this time made peace with the landlord, for, by persuasion and Don Quixote's fair words more than by threats, they had paid him what he demanded. And the servants of Don Luis were waiting for the end of the conversation with the judge and their master's decision, when the devil, who never sleeps, contrived that the barber, from whom Don Quixote had taken Mambrino's helmet and Sancho Panza the trappings of his ass in exchange for those of his own, should at this instant enter the inn. Which said barber, as he led his ass to the stable, observed Sancho Panza engaged in repairing something or other belonging to the pack-saddle. And the moment he saw it, he knew it, and made bold to attack Sancho, exclaiming,
"Ho, sir thief, I have caught you! Hand over my basin and my pack-saddle, and all my trappings that you robbed me of!"
Sancho, finding himself so unexpectedly assailed, and hearing the abuse poured upon him, seized the pack-saddle with one hand, and with the other gave the barber a cuff that bathed his teeth in blood. The barber, however, was not so ready to relinquish the prize he had made in the pack-saddle. On the contrary, he raised such an outcry that everyone in the inn came running to know what the noise and quarrel meant.
"Here, in the name of the king and justice," he cried, "this thief and highwayman wants to kill me for trying to recover my property."
"'You lie,' said Sancho. "'I am no highwayman. It was in fair war my master Don Quixote won these spoils.'
Don Quixote was standing by at the time, highly pleased to see his squire's stoutness, both offensive and defensive, and from that time forth he reckoned him a man of mettle, and in his heart resolved to dub him a knight on the first opportunity that presented itself, feeling sure that the order of chivalry would be fittingly bestowed upon him. In the course of the altercation, among other things, the barber said,
"'Gentlemen, this pack-saddle is mine as surely as I owe God a death, and I know it as well as if I had given birth to it, and here is my ass in the stable who will not let me lie. Only try it, and if it does not fit him like a glove, call me a rascal. And what is more, the same day I was robbed of this, they robbed me likewise of a new brass basin, never yet handselled, that would fetch a crown any day.'
At this Don Quixote could not keep himself from answering. And interposing between the two and separating them, he placed the pack-saddle on the ground to lie there in sight until the truth was established, and said,
"'Your worships may perceive clearly and plainly the error under which this worthy squire lies, when he calls a basin, which was, is, and shall be the helmet of Mambrino, which I won from him in fair war, and made myself master of by legitimate and lawful possession. With the pack-saddle I do not concern myself.' But I may tell you on that head that my squire Sancho asked my permission to strip off the caparison of this vanquished poltroon's steed, and with it adorn his own. I allowed him, and he took it. And as to its having been changed from a caparison into a pack-saddle, I can give no explanation except the usual one, that such transformations will take place in adventures of chivalry. To confirm all which, run, Sancho, my son, and fetch hither the helmet, which this good fellow calls a basin.
"'Egad, master,' said Sancho, "'if we have no other proof of our case than what your worship puts forward, Mambrino's helmet is just as much a basin as this good fellow's rich caparison is a pack-saddle.'
"'Do as I bid thee,' said Don Quixote. "'It cannot be that everything in this castle goes by enchantment.'
Sancho hastened to where the basin was, and brought it back with him. And when Don Quixote saw it, he took hold of it and said,
"'Your worships may see with what a face this squire can assert that this is a basin and not the helmet I told you of. And I swear by the order of chivalry I profess that this helmet is the identical one I took from him, without anything added to or taken from it.'
"'There is no doubt of that,' said Sancho, "'for from the time my master won it until now he has only fought one battle in it when he let loose those unlucky men in chains.' And if it had not been for this basin helmet, he would not have come off over well that time, for there was plenty of stone-throwing in that affair.
Chapter 45 In which the doubtful question of Mambrino's helmet and the pack-saddle is finally settled, with other adventures that occurred in truth and earnest.
"'What do you think now, gentlemen?' said the barber, "'of what these gentles say when they want to make out that this is a helmet?'
"'And whosoever says the contrary,' said Don Quixote, "'I will let him know he lies if he is a knight, and if he is a squire, that he lies again 1,000 times.'
Our own barber, who was present at all this, and understood Don Quixote's humour so thoroughly, took it into his head to back up his delusion and carry on the joke for the general amusement. So, addressing the other barber, he said,
"'Señor Barber, or whatever you are, you must know that I belong to your profession too, and have had a license to practice for more than 20 years.' And I know the implements of the barber craft, every one of them perfectly well. And I was likewise a soldier for some time in the days of my youth. And I also know the difference between a full-face helmet and a morion, and I know well a headpiece with a visor and other things pertaining to soldiering. I meant to say to soldiers' arms. And I say, saving better opinions and always with submission to sounder judgments, that this piece we have now before us, which this worthy gentleman has in his hands, not only is no barber's basin, but is as far from being one as white is from black and truth from falsehood. I say, moreover, that this, although it is a helmet, is not a complete helmet.
"'Certainly not,' said Don Quixote, "'for half of it is wanting, that is to say, the beaver.'
"'It is quite true,' said the curate, who saw the object of his friend the barber. And Cardenio, Don Fernando, and his companions agreed with him. And even the judge, if his thoughts had not been so full of Don Luis's affair, would have helped to carry on the joke. But he was so taken up with the serious matters he had on his mind that he paid little or no attention to these facetious proceedings.
"'God bless me!'
exclaimed their butt the barber at this.
"Is it possible that such an honourable company can say that this is not a basin but a helmet? Why, this is a thing that would astonish a whole university, however wise it might be." "That will do. If this basin is a helmet, why then the pack saddle must be a horse's fine caparison, as this gentleman has said."
"To me it looks like a pack saddle," said Don Quixote. "But I have already said that with that question I do not concern myself."
"As to whether it be pack saddle or caparison," said the curate, "it is only for Señor Don Quixote to say, for in these matters of chivalry all these gentlemen and I bow to his authority."
"By God, gentlemen," said Don Quixote, "so many strange things have happened to me in this castle on the two occasions on which I have sojourned in it, that I will not venture to assert anything positively in reply to any question touching anything it contains. For it is my belief that everything that goes on within it goes by enchantment. The first time, an enchanted Moor that there is in it gave me sore trouble, nor did Sancho fare well among certain followers of his. And last night I was kept hanging by this arm for nearly 2 hours, without knowing how or why I came by such a mishap. So that now, for me to come forward to give an opinion in such a puzzling matter would be to risk a rash decision. As regards the assertion that this is a basin and not a helmet, I have already given an answer. But as to the question whether this is a pack saddle or a caparison, I will not venture to give a positive opinion, but will leave it to your worship's better judgment. Perhaps, as you are not dubbed knights, like myself, the enchantments of this place have nothing to do with you, and your faculties are unfettered, and you can see things in this castle as they really and truly are, and not as they appear to me."
"There can be no question," said Don Fernando on this, "but that Señor Don Quixote has spoken very wisely, and that with us rests the decision of this matter, and that we may have surer ground to go on, I will take the votes of the gentlemen in secret, and declare the result clearly and fully."
To those who were in the secret of Don Quixote's humour, all this afforded great amusement. But to those who knew nothing about it, it seemed the greatest nonsense in the world, in particular to the four servants of Don Luis, as well as to Don Luis himself, and to three other travellers who had by chance come to the inn, and had the appearance of officers of the Holy Brotherhood, as indeed they were. But the one who above all was at his wit's end was the barber whose basin, there before his very eyes, had been turned into Mambrino's helmet, and whose pack-saddle, he had no doubt whatever, was about to become a rich caparison for a horse. All laughed to see Don Fernando going from one to another collecting the votes, and whispering to them to give him their private opinion whether the treasure over which there had been so much fighting was a pack-saddle or a caparison. But after he had taken the votes of those who knew Don Quixote, he said aloud,
"The fact is, my good fellow, that I am tired collecting such a number of opinions, for I find that there is not one of whom I ask what I desire to know who does not tell me that it is absurd to say that this is the pack-saddle of an ass, and not the caparison of a horse, nay, of a thoroughbred horse. So you must submit, for in spite of you and your ass, this is a caparison and no pack-saddle, and you have stated and proved your case very badly."
"May I never share heaven," said the poor barber, "if your worships are not all mistaken, and may my soul appear before God as that appears to me, a pack-saddle and not a caparison. But might is ever right. Now, I say no more, and indeed I'm not drunk, for I am fasting, except it be from sin."
The simple talk of the barber did not afford less amusement than the absurdities of Don Quixote, who now observed,
"There is no more to be done now than for each to take what belongs to him and to whom God has given it. May St. Peter add his blessing."
But said one of the four servants,
"Unless indeed this is a deliberate joke, I cannot bring myself to believe that men so intelligent as those present are, or seem to be, can venture to declare and assert that this is not a basin, and that not a pack saddle. But as I perceive they do assert and declare it, I can only come to the conclusion that there is some mystery in this persistence in what is so opposed to the evidence of experience and truth itself. For I swear by," and here he rapped out a round oath, "all the people in the world will not make me believe that this is not a barber's basin, and that not a jackass's pack saddle."
"It might easily be a she-ass's," observed the curate.
"It is all the same," said the servant. "That is not the point, but whether it is or is not a pack-saddle, as your worships say."
On hearing this, one of the newly arrived officers of the Brotherhood, who had been listening to the dispute and controversy, unable to restrain his anger and impatience, exclaimed, "It is a pack saddle as sure as my father is my father, and whoever has said or will say anything else must be drunk."
"You lie like a rascally clown," returned Don Quixote.
And lifting his pike, which he had never let out of his hand, he delivered such a blow at his head that, had not the officer dodged it, it would have stretched him at full length. The pike was shivered in pieces against the ground, and the rest of the officers, seeing their comrade assaulted, raised a shout calling for help for the Holy Brotherhood. The landlord, who was of the fraternity, ran at once to fetch his staff of office and his sword, and ranged himself on the side of his comrades. The servants of Don Luis clustered round him, lest he should escape from them in the confusion. The barber, seeing the house turned upside down, once more laid hold of his pack-saddle, and Sancho did the same. Don Quixote drew his sword and charged the officers. Don Luis cried out to his servants to leave him alone and go and help Don Quixote, and Cardenio and Don Fernando, who were supporting him. The curate was shouting at the top of his voice, the landlady was screaming, her daughter was wailing, Maritornes was weeping, Dorothea was aghast, Lucinda terror-stricken, and Doña Clara in a faint. The barber cudgelled Sancho, and Sancho pommelled the barber. Don Luis gave one of his servants, who ventured to catch him by the arm to keep him from escaping, a cuff that bathed his teeth in blood. The judge took his part. Don Fernando had got one of the officers down and was belabouring him heartily. The landlord raised his voice again, calling for help for the Holy Brotherhood, so that the whole inn was nothing but cries, shouts, shrieks, confusion, terror, dismay, mishaps, sword cuts, fisticuffs, cudgelings, kicks, and bloodshed. And in the midst of all this chaos, complication, and general entanglement, Don Quixote took it into his head that he had been plunged into the thick of the discord of Agramante's camp, and in a voice that shook the inn like thunder, he cried out,
"Hold all! Let all sheathe their swords, let all be calm, and attend to me as they value their lives."
All paused at his mighty voice, and he went on to say,
"Did I not tell you, sirs, that this castle was enchanted, and that a legion or so of devils dwelt in it? In proof whereof I call upon you to behold with your own eyes how the discord of Agramante's camp has come hither, and been transferred into the midst of us. See how they fight there for the sword, here for the horse, on that side for the eagle, on this for the helmet. We are all fighting, and all at cross purposes. Come, then, you, Senor Judge, and you, Senor Curate, let the one represent King Agramante and the other King Sobrino, and make peace among us. For by God Almighty it is a sorry business that so many persons of quality as we are should slay one another for such trifling cause."
The officers, who did not understand Don Quixote's mode of speaking, and found themselves roughly handled by Don Fernando, Cardenio, and their companions, were not to be appeased. The barber was, however, for both his beard and his pack-saddle were the worse for the struggle. Sancho, like a good servant, obeyed the slightest word of his master. While the four servants of Don Luis kept quiet, when they saw how little they gained by not being so. The landlord alone insisted upon it that they must punish the insolence of this madman, who at every turn raised a disturbance in the inn. But at length the uproar was stilled for the present. The pack-saddle remained a caparison till the day of judgment, and the basin a helmet, and the inn a castle, in Don Quixote's imagination. All having been now pacified and made friends by the persuasion of the judge and the curate, the servants of Don Luis began again to urge him to return with them at once. And while he was discussing the matter with them, the judge took counsel with Don Fernando, Cardenio, and the curate as to what he ought to do in the case, telling them how it stood and what Don Luis had said to him. It was agreed at length that Don Fernando should tell the servants of Don Luis who he was, and that it was his desire that Don Luis should accompany him to Andalusia, where he would receive from the Marquis his brother the welcome his quality entitled him to, for otherwise it was easy to see from the determination of Don Luis that he would not return to his father at present, though they tore him to pieces. On learning the rank of Don Fernando and the resolution of Don Luis, the four then settled it between themselves that three of them should return to tell his father how matters stood, and that the other should remain to wait upon Don Luis, and not leave him until they came back for him, or his father's orders were known. Thus, by the authority of Agramante and the wisdom of King Sobrino, all this complication of disputes was arranged. But the enemy of concord and hater of peace, feeling himself slighted and made a fool of, and seeing how little he had gained after having involved them all in such an elaborate entanglement, resolved to try his hand once more by stirring up fresh quarrels and disturbances. It came about in this wise. The officers were pacified on learning the rank of those with whom they had been engaged, and withdrew from the contest, considering that whatever the result might be, they were likely to get the worst of the battle. But one of them, the one who had been thrashed and kicked by Don Fernando, recollected that among some warrants he carried for the arrest of certain delinquents, he had one against Don Quixote, whom the Holy Brotherhood had ordered to be arrested for setting the galley slaves free, as Sancho had, with very good reason, apprehended. Suspecting how it was, then, he wished to satisfy himself as to whether Don Quixote's features corresponded, and taking a parchment out of his bosom, he lit upon what he was in search of, and setting himself to read it deliberately, for he was not a quick reader, as he made out each word, he fixed his eyes on Don Quixote, and went on comparing the description in the warrant with his face, and discovered that beyond all doubt he was the person described in it. As soon as he had satisfied himself, folding up the parchment, he took the warrant in his left hand, and with his right seized Don Quixote by the collar so tightly that he did not allow him to breathe, and shouted aloud, "Help for the Holy Brotherhood, and that you may see I demand it in earnest, read this warrant which says this highwayman is to be arrested." The curate took the warrant, and saw that what the officer said was true, and that it agreed with Don Quixote's appearance, who, on his part, when he found himself roughly handled by this rascally clown, worked up to the highest pitch of wrath, and all his joints cracking with rage, with both hands seized the officer by the throat with all his might, so that had he not been helped by his comrades, he would have yielded up his life ere Don Quixote released his hold. The landlord, who had perforce to support his brother officers, ran at once to aid them. The landlady, when she saw her husband engaged in a fresh quarrel, lifted up her voice afresh, and its note was immediately caught up by Maritornes and her daughter, calling upon heaven and all present for help. And Sancho, seeing what was going on, exclaimed, "By the Lord, it is quite true what my master says about the enchantments of this castle, for it is impossible to live an hour in peace in it." Don Fernando parted the officer and Don Quixote, and to their mutual contentment, made them relax the grip by which they held the one the coat-collar, the other the throat of his adversary. For all this, however, the officers did not cease to demand their prisoner and call on them to help, and deliver him over bound into their power, as was required for the service of the king and of the Holy Brotherhood, on whose behalf they again demanded aid and assistance to effect the capture of this robber and footpad of the highways. Don Quixote smiled when he heard these words, and said very calmly, "Come now, base, ill-born brood, call ye it highway robbery to give freedom to those in bondage, to release the captives, to succour the miserable, to raise up the fallen, to relieve the needy? Infamous beings, who by your vile grovelling intellects deserve that heaven should not make known to you the virtue that lies in knight-errantry, or show you the sin and ignorance in which ye lie when ye refuse to respect the shadow, not to say the presence, of any knight-errant. Come now, band not of officers but of thieves, footpads with the license of the Holy Brotherhood. Tell me, who was the ignoramus who signed a warrant of arrest against such a knight as I am? Who was he that did not know that knights-errant are independent of all jurisdictions, that their law is their sword, their charter their prowess, and their edicts their will? Who, I say again, was the fool that knows not that there are no letters patent of nobility that confer such privileges or exemptions as a knight-errant acquires the day he is dubbed a knight, and devotes himself to the arduous calling of chivalry? What knight-errant ever paid poll-tax, duty, queen's pin-money, king's dues, toll or ferry? What tailor ever took payment of him for making his clothes? What castellan that received him in his castle ever made him pay his shot? What king did not seat him at his table?
What damsel was not enamoured of him, and did not yield herself up wholly to his will and pleasure? And lastly, what knight-errant has there been, is there, or will there ever be in the world, not bold enough to give single-handed 400 cudgelings to 400 officers of the Holy Brotherhood, if they come in his way?
Chapter 46 Of the End of the Notable Adventure of the Officers of the Holy Brotherhood, and of the Great Ferocity of Our Worthy Knight, Don Quixote. While Don Quixote was talking in this strain, the curate was endeavouring to persuade the officers that he was out of his senses, as they might perceive by his deeds and his words, and that they need not press the matter any further, for even if they arrested him and carried him off, they would have to release him by and by as a madman. To which the holder of the warrant replied that he had nothing to do with inquiring into Don Quixote's madness, but only to execute his superior's orders, and that once taken they might let him go 300 times if they liked.
"For all that," said the curate, "you must not take him away this time, nor will he, it is my opinion, let himself be taken away."
In short, the curate used such arguments, and Don Quixote did such mad things, that the officers would have been more mad than he was if they had not perceived his want of wits, and so they thought it best to allow themselves to be pacified, and even to act as peacemakers between the barber and Sancho Panza, who still continued their altercation with much bitterness. In the end they, as officers of justice, settled the question by arbitration in such a manner that both sides were, if not perfectly contented, at least to some extent satisfied. For they changed the pack-saddles, but not the girths or headstalls. And as to Mambrino's helmet, the curate, sub rosa, and without Don Quixote's knowing it, paid 8 reals for the basin, and the barber executed a full receipt and engagement to make no further demand then or thenceforth for evermore. Amen. These two disputes, which were the most important and gravest, being settled, it only remained for the servants of Don Luis to consent that 3 of them should return while 1 was left to accompany him whither Don Fernando desired to take him. And good luck and better fortune, having already begun to solve difficulties and remove obstructions in favour of the lovers and warriors of the inn, were pleased to persevere and bring everything to a happy issue. For the servants agreed to do as Don Luis wished, which gave Doña Clara such happiness that no one could have looked into her face just then without seeing the joy of her heart. Zoraida, though she did not fully comprehend all she saw, was grave or gay without knowing why, as she watched and studied the various countenances, but particularly her Spaniards, whom she followed with her eyes and clung to with her soul. The gift and compensation which the curate gave the barber had not escaped the landlord's notice, and he demanded Don Quixote's reckoning, together with the amount of the damage to his wineskins and the loss of his wine, swearing that neither Rocinante nor Sancho's ass should leave the inn until he had been paid to the very last farthing. The curate settled all amicably, and Don Fernando paid, though the judge had also very readily offered to pay the score, and all became so peaceful and quiet that the inn no longer reminded one of the discord of Agramante's camp, as Don Quixote said, but of the peace and tranquillity of the days of Octavianus, for all which it was the universal opinion that their thanks were due to the great zeal and eloquence of the curate, and to the unexampled generosity of Don Fernando. Finding himself now clear and quit of all quarrels, his squire's as well as his own, Don Quixote considered that it would be advisable to continue the journey he had begun, and bring to a close that great adventure for which he had been called and chosen. And with this high resolve he went and knelt before Dorothea, who, however, would not allow him to utter a word until he had risen. So, to obey her, he rose, and said, "It is a common proverb, fair lady, that diligence is the mother of good fortune, and experience has often shown in important affairs that the earnestness of the negotiator brings the doubtful case to a successful termination. But in nothing does this truth show itself more plainly than in war, where quickness and activity forestall the devices of the enemy and win the victory before the foe has time to defend himself. All this I say, exalted and esteemed lady, because it seems to me that for us to remain any longer in this castle now is useless, and may be injurious to us in a way that we shall find out some day, for who knows but that your enemy the giant may have learned by means of secret and diligent spies that I am going to destroy him, and if the opportunity be given him, he may seize it to fortify himself in some impregnable castle or stronghold, against which all my efforts and the might of my indefatigable arm may avail but little. Therefore, lady, let us, as I say, forestall his schemes by our activity, and let us depart at once in quest of fair fortune. For your highness is only kept from enjoying it as fully as you could desire by my delay in encountering your adversary. Don Quixote held his peace and said no more, calmly awaiting the reply of the beauteous princess, who, with commanding dignity and in a style adapted to Don Quixote's own, replied to him in these words, "I give you thanks, Sir Knight, for the eagerness you, like a good knight to whom it is a natural obligation to succour the orphan and the needy, display to afford me aid in my sore trouble. And heaven grant that your wishes and mine may be realized, so that you may see that there are women in this world capable of gratitude. As to my departure, let it be forthwith, for I have no will but yours. Dispose of me entirely in accordance with your good pleasure, for she who has once entrusted to you the defense of her person, and placed in your hands the recovery of her dominions, must not think of offering opposition to that which your wisdom may ordain."
"On, then, in God's name," said Don Quixote, "for when a lady humbles herself to me, I will not lose the opportunity of raising her up and placing her on the throne of her ancestors. Let us depart at once, for the common saying that in delay there is danger lends spurs to my eagerness to take the road, and as neither heaven has created nor hell seen any that can daunt or intimidate me, saddle Rocinante, Sancho, and get ready thy ass and the queen's palfrey, and let us take leave of the castellan and these gentlemen, and go hence this very instant."
Sancho, who was standing by all the time, said, shaking his head,
"Ah, master, master, there is more mischief in the village than one hears of, begging all good bodies' pardon."
"What mischief can there be in any village or in all the cities of the world, you booby, that can hurt my reputation?" said Don Quixote.
"If your worship is angry," replied Sancho, "I will hold my tongue and leave unsaid what as a good squire I am bound to say, and what a good servant should tell his master."
"Say what thou wilt," returned Don Quixote, "provided thy words be not meant to work upon my fears. For thou, if thou fearest, art behaving like thyself, but I like myself in not fearing."
"It is nothing of the sort, as I am a sinner before God," said Sancho, "but that I take it to be sure and certain that this lady, who calls herself queen of the great kingdom of Micomicon, is no more so than my mother. For if she was what she says, she would not go rubbing noses with one that is here every instant, behind every door."
Dorothea turned red at Sancho's words, for the truth was that her husband Don Fernando had now and then, when the others were not looking, gathered from her lips some of the reward his love had earned. And Sancho, seeing this, had considered that such freedom was more like a courtesan than a queen of a great kingdom. She, however, being unable or not caring to answer him, allowed him to proceed, and he continued,
"This I say, senor, because if, after we have travelled roads and highways and passed bad nights and worse days, one who is now enjoying himself in this inn is to reap the fruit of our labours, there's no need for me to be in a hurry to saddle Rocinante, put the pad on the ass, or get ready the palfrey, for it will be better for us to stay quiet and let every jade mind her spinning and let us go to dinner."
Good God! What was the indignation of Don Quixote when he heard the audacious words of his squire? So great was it that in a voice inarticulate with rage, with a stammering tongue and eyes that flashed living fire, he exclaimed,
"Rascally clown, boorish, insolent, and ignorant, ill-spoken, foul-mouthed, impudent, backbiter, and slanderer, hast thou dared to utter such words in my presence, and in that of these illustrious ladies? Hast thou dared to harbour such gross and shameless thoughts in thy muddled imagination? Begone from my presence, thou born monster, storehouse of lies, hoard of untruths, garner of knaveries, inventor of scandals, publisher of absurdities, enemy of the respect due to royal personages. Begone! Show thyself no more before me under pain of my wrath."
And so saying, he knitted his brows, puffed out his cheeks, gazed around him, and stamped on the ground violently with his right foot, showing in every way the rage that was pent up in his heart. And at his words and furious gestures, Sancho was so scared and terrified that he would have been glad if the earth had opened that instant and swallowed him. And his only thought was to turn round
and make his escape from the angry presence of his master. But the ready-witted Dorothea, who by this time so well understood Don Quixote's humour, said to mollify his wrath, "Be not irritated at the absurdities your good squire has uttered, Sir Knight of the Rueful Countenance, for perhaps he did not utter them without cause, and from his good sense and Christian conscience, it is not likely that he would bear false witness against any one. We may therefore believe, without any hesitation, that since, as you say, Sir Knight, everything in this castle goes and is brought about by means of enchantment, Sancho, I say, may possibly have seen, through this diabolical medium, what he says he saw, so much to the detriment of my modesty."
"I swear by God omnipotent," exclaimed Don Quixote at this, "your highness has hit the point, and that some vile illusion must have come before this sinner of a Sancho that made him see what it would have been impossible to see by any other means than enchantments. For I know well enough, from the poor fellow's goodness and harmlessness, that he is incapable of bearing false witness against anybody."
"True, no doubt," said Don Fernando. "For which reason, Señor Don Quixote, you ought to forgive him and restore him to the bosom of your favour, sicut erat in principio, as it was in the beginning, before illusions of this sort had taken away his senses." Don Quixote said he was ready to pardon him, and the curate went for Sancho, who came in very humbly, and falling on his knees begged for the hand of his master, who, having presented it to him and allowed him to kiss it, gave him his blessing and said,
"Now, Sancho, my son, thou wilt be convinced of the truth of what I have many a time told thee, that everything in this castle is done by means of enchantment."
"So it is, I believe," said Sancho, "except the affair of the blanket, which came to pass in reality by ordinary means."
"Believe it not," said Don Quixote, "for had it been so, I would have avenged thee that instant, or even now. But neither then nor now could I, nor have I seen anyone upon whom to avenge thy wrong."
They were all eager to know what the affair of the blanket was, and the landlord gave them a minute account of Sancho's flights, at which they laughed not a little, and at which Sancho would have been no less out of countenance, had not his master once more assured him it was all enchantment. For all that, his simplicity never reached so high a pitch that he could persuade himself it was not the plain and simple truth, without any deception whatever about it, that he had been blanketed by beings of flesh and blood, and not by visionary and imaginary phantoms, as his master believed and protested. The illustrious company had now been 2 days in the inn, and as it seemed to them time to depart, they devised a plan so that, without giving Dorothea and Don Fernando the trouble of going back with Don Quixote to his village, under pretense of restoring Queen Micomicona, the curate and barber might carry him away with them as they proposed, and the curate be able to take his madness in hand at home. And in pursuance of their plan, they arranged with the owner of an ox-cart who happened to be passing that way, to carry him after this fashion. They constructed a kind of cage with wooden bars, large enough to hold Don Quixote comfortably. And then Don Fernando and his companions, the servants of Don Luis, and the officers of the Brotherhood, together with the landlord, by the directions and advice of the curate, covered their faces and disguised themselves, some in one way, some in another, so as to appear to Don Quixote quite different from the persons he had seen in the castle. This done, in profound silence they entered the room where he was asleep, taking his rest after the past phrase, and advancing to where he was sleeping tranquilly, not dreaming of anything of the kind happening, they seized him firmly, and bound him fast hand and foot, so that when he awoke startled he was unable to move, and could only marvel and wonder at the strange figures he saw before him, upon which he at once gave way to the idea which his crazed fancy invariably conjured up before him, and took it into his head that all these shapes were phantoms of the enchanted castle, and that he himself was unquestionably enchanted, as he could neither move nor help himself. Precisely what the curate, as the concoctor of the scheme, expected would happen. Of all that were there, Sancho was the only one who was at once in his senses and in his own proper character, and he, though he was within very little of sharing his master's infirmity, did not fail to perceive who all these disguised figures were. But he did not dare to open his lips until he saw what came of this assault and capture of his master, nor did the latter utter a word, waiting to the upshot of his mishap, which was that bringing in the cage they shut him up in it, and nailed the bars so firmly that they could not be easily burst open. They then took him on their shoulders, and as they passed out of the room an awful voice, as much so as the barber, not he of the pack saddle, but the other, was able to make it, was heard to say,
"Oh, knight of the rueful countenance, let not this captivity in which thou art placed afflict thee, for this must needs be for the more speedy accomplishment of the adventure in which thy great heart has engaged thee, the which shall be accomplished when the raging Manchegan lion